The following podcast is brought to you by the Jonas Podcasting Network, found exclusively at WrestlingWithJonas.com. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Wrestling with Jonas Live. And it's not just any old Monday evening. It's not just any old episode of Wrestling with Jonas, as if there is such a thing anyway. This is episode 267. This is the week that marks the fourth anniversary of Wrestling with Jonas. We started 4 years ago this week. And today I got an amazing guest. None other than Joseph Connors on the Wrestling with Jonas podcast. Joseph, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing today, my friend?
Good evening. Congratulations on the fourth anniversary. And I think it's a very, you've got the perfect guest to celebrate that with.
I think so. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm very well, very well. Currently adorned in, before you run over my accolades, currently adorned in championship gold, Apex Heavyweight Champion, and the Sog Pro Champion right there. And they're with me in this lovely office of mine. And, gracing you with our presence, so let's
absolutely we're blessed. And thank you so much for coming on this milestone episode of Wrestling with Jonas. And like I say, I was admiring the posters behind you there, Joseph. Big Star Wars fan, as am I. I was kind of giving away roughly how old I am when I told you that I saw some of them at the cinema the first time round. But we'll talk more about films a little bit later on, because I know that you're a big film fan, as am I. But for anybody that wants to get in touch and send us your questions live on air with Joseph Connors, please do so. Send them through to us using your chosen device. They'll ping through to us. We'll bring them up on screen and we'll do our very best to answer every single question live on air during the course of this broadcast. But first of all, Joseph, once again, thank you for coming on the show. I've got to say, the last 11 or 12 months since you came back onto the UK Indies full time, it's been a pretty wild time for you, hasn't it, really? In a nutshell, tell us kind of how you're feeling, your thoughts on what you've done in the last 11 to 12 months, Joseph.
So the last 12 months, I mean, for anyone who follows me on social media or has seen any of my work or seen any of the words I've put out there, I feel brilliant. I really do. I feel at the top of my game. I put a tweet out the other day. I mean, there's all these cliches about it's going to be my year and I'm on top of the world and better than I've ever been. But like these words that I'm using at the moment, I just have a confidence about myself at the moment. I'm not looking for validation from anybody except myself these days. And that's all I need. And, you know, I'm very happy with the work I've been doing. I'm happy with the place I've been, been performing at. But I'll be lying if there's not places I still want to compete at. Still got a lot of things I want to check off the list, but I'm happy with the last 12 months. Of course, you know, like I said, right at the beginning, currently holding 3 championships, 2 in England, 1 in Denmark, had the chance to travel Europe again. I've been up and down the country. My diary's been full. I'm enjoying what I do. You know, this year, you're talking about, this is your fourth anniversary special. In less than 20 days, it's my 16th year anniversary since my first match. So it's crazy to have a look back and see what I've accomplished. But even at my age of 35, I don't have this sort of like time fading anymore. I just feel that I feel healthy, I feel ready, I feel strong, I feel fast, I feel all these things. And yeah, I'm excited.
Do you think we've got the best version of Joseph Connors that we've ever seen?
At present, yeah. But I'm always evolving. I'm always learning. I've never taken my foot off the gas. I look back at work that people enjoyed and praised me for or bring up and stuff that I can look back and enjoy. But, you know, in that period, some of my best matches, I think to myself, well, if I could just cut and paste what I know now in, I'd be excited at the prospects. So I think I'm at my best, but every day I really am involved because I never stop. I never stop learning. I never stop training. I never stop getting in there. I don't. And that's, I just want to be better.
Yeah. Yeah. And just to kind of demonstrate that in a nutshell, I mean, looking at the last month, how busy you've been, you had a strap match against Tate Mayfair's at Pro Wrestling Chaos. You did shows in Sweden, shows in Denmark, winning titles in Denmark for Tag Team Championships, of course, winning titles for Apex Pro, Sovereign Pro very recently, performing up and down the UK. Two training seminars in the space of 5 days. I think you did one yesterday and you've got another one on Friday. So in a nutshell, that demonstrates at least some of the grind that you as a top pro go through on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, well, you always want to be busy in anything that you do, anything. Yeah. Otherwise, people are going to, you know, overtake you. And it's always important to be involved in the thing that you love and the thing that you're working at. You know, you need reps, you need moments in the ring, you need to be on top of your game, you need to be working the best, you need to be out there. And I've made it a point, just like pretty much all the pros up and down the country, everybody wants to be busy. But like I said, it's not just about volume for me anymore. It has to be the right circumstance, the right situation. And luckily, I've been involved with a lot of top promotions, a lot of top training schools. That's what I'm about at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've had Adam Wright get in touch saying British legends Joseph Connors there. And Facebook user, let's say no names popped up on this one, but congrats on the 4 years, buddy. So happy for you. That's really, really cool. That brings us to our first question that came through before we went live. It's actually from Pro Wrestling Chaos that said, did you enjoy your Chaos debut and will we see more from you in 2023? So obviously they're alluding to that strap match against Tate Mayfair's that I mentioned just a moment or two ago. But Pro Wrestling Chaos getting in touch, asking whether you enjoyed your debut for them and will they see more of you next year?
Yeah, simple answer. I absolutely loved it. I had an opportunity to work with Chaos years ago, but the dates just unfortunately never lined up. And I always knew from what I heard that it was a great place to go and wrestle at. And the welcome I got was awesome. The promotion, the roster, the setup's fantastic. I know Tate Mayfair's is, I know, well, I don't know Tate Mayfair's personally, but I've heard him running his mouth in person and online.
He's good at that.
Skill competitor, but I would be lying if I didn't say I enjoyed getting my hands on him. I've also, you know, I've got many enemies, but I've got a few alliances as well. And Danny Jones, there, pro wrestling Chaos champion, he's very skilled. He's very talented. We're going to be tagging up November 26th, which is, like I said to you, my 16th year anniversary. Against Tate Mayfair's and Mulligan, and there's a lot of high stakes involved there. And I'd be lying if I didn't say that I want to carry on my working relationship with Chaos into 2023. So I think I'm very hopeful, and I'm very, very, very hopeful that we get the victory there. And I don't see why Chaos won't want to keep working with myself. So 2023, I would say things are looking likely, but I'm not in complete charge of that destiny. But definitely, I've nothing but good things to say about Chaos. I think anyone who's experienced the atmosphere there, in the audience, it's got that sort of rock and roll kind of vibe about it. Very homegrown fans, great roster, great diverse set of talent as well. So definitely want to be a part of Pro Wrestling Chaos going forward.
Absolutely. And just because I think Tate will probably be watching this one, here's some shots, clips from that strap match, and putting Tate through the grind there. He was obviously trying to beg his way out of the match there. I don't know, but Tate is greatness. But Joseph Connors had you on that day.
Certainly did.
Absolutely. And coming back onto the indies, I think you probably had your first match either late last year or early this year. But obviously, You're in charge of your own schedule once again. You're your own booker. You can kind of choose where you work, who you want to work for. Like I say, you like to keep busy. But is it quite liberating and quite exciting now that you've got that freedom again to be able to kind of spread your wings, go wherever you want and work for whoever you want and work on your schedule? Is it quite fun and liberating after a few years of not having that freedom?
Yeah, it was exciting. I mean, when I first joined WWE, I was still able to work for certain independents. So I was having a relatively busy schedule, like some of the guys and girls involved on the same roster. So I was still touring up and down the country and filling my WWE commitments. And then, of course, you know, not only did WWE wrestlers suffer it, the whole world suffered the thing that we've all experienced, COVID, you know. So that 2 year or, you know, 2 year sort of shutdown for independent wrestlers, and I was one of the lucky people to be under a contract at that time. And then coming back after COVID and just fulfilling WWE dates. And at the time, I wasn't really actively in the ring in WWE. So I really had a hunger to be back out there and getting that opportunity. Like you say, there's always that bit of trepidation. It's sort of learning the waters again. The scene's changed as it always should. It's always secular. It's always moving. There's different men and women coming up, different promotions coming up. Some people I've worked with before in terms of bookers and promoters. And just sort of learn, you know, I was learning who was trustworthy, who I could put my stock with. You know, it took a few months to just kind of wade the waters a little bit, but it was nice being able to go, okay, I can go back to Italy now. I can do other things outside of wrestling if I choose to do them, if an opportunity comes up. So those were the exciting prospects, you know. And I'm very fair. I think if you work with me, I'll be honest. I just expect people to be the same with me. That's all I ask. You know, if the honesty and the trust is there, then I'm fully on board, and I try and give as much as I can, whatever I do, whatever endeavor of life I'm involved in. So, and I've just asked for the same for the people I work with. So, yeah, I think those first few months it was interesting, exciting, a bit scary as well at times. But I think I've got a lay of the land over the last few months, especially.
Absolutely, absolutely. And a quick shout out, if I may, to Elliot 93 and Elliot Marriott, who did this fantastic graphic to help us celebrate the 4th anniversary of Wrestling with Jonas, and our guest, Joseph Connors. And Elliot's actually been in touch and sent us a question via Twitter a couple of days ago. Since returning to the independent scene, you've definitely been doing some of your best work. Do you feel like you are where you want to be right now? And are you working towards a bigger goal, or maybe returning to the mainstream scene overseas? So are you where you want to be right now? Obviously, you're always evolving, always looking to improve, progress, move forward. What's the kind of the plans or the goals as far as where you are right now and the immediate future?
I think anybody involved in sort of anything in life, whether it's entertainment or any job, you always want to be moving up the ladder, because I think you'll get stagnant and you'll plateau. So the difference is now that I look back at my life and my career so far, and there's been many a times that even when I achieved certain things which were big milestones, at least for me, never really took a moment to enjoy them. It was more a case of what's next? How did I do? You know, what am I doing tomorrow? What have I got next week? Yeah, that went okay, but what, you know, what, blah, 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 blah. And there's still big parts of me that has that now, but I take more time to enjoy things now. But I'd be lying. It's interesting. I was talking to somebody the other day about this. I think, you know, when I got into the wrestling industry, I was 18. And then I would say that I really started to take things a lot more seriously sort of in my early to mid-20s. And that's when I decided, you know, I'd like to, you know, work for the WWE in some capacity. And then I achieved that when I was 29. And then the last few years, I'd obviously worked with that company. And then coming out of that, it was interesting because I didn't specifically have, like, I must do this by this time or this needs to happen. And I don't have, like, a time frame, but I, you know, obviously I sit, you know, with the year closing out and, you know, things happening in my personal life and my professional life, thinking about what I'd like to do. There's definitely some promotions in this country that I'd like to be a part of. And there are opportunities abroad that I'd like to at least explore and see if the possibilities are there. So, I mean, I can't confirm anything yet, and I don't, with wrestling, everything, until you're actually holding a plane ticket in your hand or you're standing in the ring, nothing's guaranteed. But I'd like to put something together in the States, and I would love to do something in Japan one day. So the States is perhaps a little bit more likely at the present, but there are a few of the mainstream companies where I could see myself being a good fit and a good asset if the possibility came about. So I think in the next year, I'll look at trying to make that more of a, at least exploring if there's a road there, if there's an avenue. Obviously, I've done a lot of work in Europe, but I've only worked in the States with WWE, and I'd like to you know, add some more to my resume when it comes to that country.
Absolutely, absolutely. And a bit later on, towards the end of the interview, I'll be able to give out Joseph's email address and booking information and socials so that companies can reach out to him to book him worldwide. Joseph, you want to work pretty much anywhere.
Well, as long as, as long as it's beneficial to both parties, then that's absolutely.
My next question is, coming back onto the Indies 12 months ago, did you make any conscious decisions coming back on how you wanted to be perceived or how you wanted to do things this time around? Obviously, you said that you were doing sporadic indie dates whilst you were signed to WWE, but coming back full time, did you have any kind of conscious decisions on how you wanted to do things differently this time around, or how you wanted to be perceived or received upon your return?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to input a lot of the things I'd learned over the last few years as well, because being in that facility, it made me a better in-ring performer, better in-ring wrestler for starters. And I also wanted to tell you where my mindset was. Like I said, my confidence was coming back. I'd be lying if I didn't say that in some respects my confidence had been jilted a little bit at times. I think it's always going to be in those environments. I can't speak for everybody, I can only speak for myself. But I just wanted to present something different, really take in how I'm truly feel, to be honest. I mean, I worked with Bear Vision, who do some really good work. I love him as well as Elliot, another very good designer, and put up those projects on the scene. And I had a vision for what I wanted to say, but I didn't sit and write my memoirs out or anything like that. I just sort of wanted to get a camera in my face and just sort of express my feelings and express my feelings towards myself, because I've got a lot of, inner dialogue, and I had a lot of thoughts over the last few years. So I just wanted to present who I am with the volume dialed up, because I'm not always, dialed to 11 every day of my life. But when I'm in a professional wrestling environment, you have to be. So I just wanted to take that confidence, put my insecurities out there, and let people know, look, I'm smashing through those now, and I don't really care. I don't really care what anybody thinks. I mean, there has been times in my life where I have cared, whereas now I have that. There's so many talented people out there, but I consider myself to be one of them. So why would I lie and say that I don't, I'm not going to hold back and worry about what certain people think or blah, 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 because for every positive comment you get, you're going to get two negative ones. It's just a case of not focusing on any of that and just focusing on yourself, making yourself better, doing the things I set out to do the best to my ability. And that's what I wanted to put out there.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you mentioned Bear Vision, and they've done a couple of videos for you. One in particular, which I noticed on one of your socials, was the one with Riley Nova sitting in the chair, and I think you played the devil on one side of him and the kind of the angel on the other side of him, and there was various kind of negative phrases that the devil Joseph Connors was telling Riley Nova on his right, and then on his left the angel was telling him the more positive phrase or the positive equivalent, and some of the phrases almost kind of made me think, well, Are these things that you may have been told throughout your career, certainly as a younger wrestler, an up-and-coming wrestler? Was this a little bit of a reflection of what you've gone through as a younger pro, maybe?
Well, the whole bread for better concept is the fact that you hear these things about paying your dues, climbing the ladder, how many young, even people, you've got to work for experience.
You're a boy in a man's world.
Yeah, all the sort of like typical, you've got to do this to succeed, and you've got to wait your turn. My point is with Riley, I've got the fact that I am 12 years older than him. I do have 16 years of experience, but Riley's very, very, very good and going to be a top star in this country. And the point of the fact of the matter is, if he comes along with me, which he has done, I'm saying, bypass all the crap. Don't take the roads that I've taken. Take the road that I'm on now, because you don't need to wait you know, we don't need to play this game. And that's what it's about. It's giving him that confidence and in revitalizing my confidence. And there's very few people that I'd go on a limb for, but he's one of them. And he has got that raw ability, that raw talent. And just the basic point is, you don't need to wait. You know, all the, I'm trying to wade him through the BS that's out there, you know, in life and in the wrestling industry, because there's BS everywhere, you know, and it's very, you get a lot of carrots dangled in front of you. You know, I'm sure it's the same for you and you know, throughout your life, you know, it's just the way the world is. And it took me a long time to learn that. Or even when I did learn it, maybe not allow myself to just plow through it, which is the stage I'm at now. And I'm comfortable sort of saying that. So I see that in Riley. He really has that raw ability. And it's a case of like, look, if you want to come with me on this journey, let's do it. You know, because, you know, if you look over, like it's like you were saying, you know, if you look over my career, I've had very few tag partners and stuff. I've had associates, but he's someone I'm willing to go out on a limb for. Whereas in the past, maybe I wouldn't have done.
Yeah. And I've seen Riley perform a few times. He's an exceptional talent. Got a great look. I'd say he must be 6'2", 6'3". A great guy as well, really, really good nature. And to have you as his mentor or to be under your wing is definitely a benefit. And like I say, to walk him through all the BS or to avoid all the minefields that you may have gone through and to give him that extra advice is going to pay dividends. But I'm not sure how old Riley is, but I know he's got an exceptional future. Where do you think kind of the limits are for somebody like a Riley Nova?
I don't think there are any limits. I think the only limitations that we have are the ones that we give ourselves. It's a cliche, but sometimes there is no glass ceiling. Like when I first started, John, like, you know, the person I was, there was, you know, the wrestling scene was a lot different in this country, and the thoughts of going to WWE, I remember people that, you know, I will never go to WWE, this will never happen. Or, I mean, who would have thought that, I mean, look at the contract situation now, not just in WWE, but AEW, Impact, NWA, MLW. Look at, you know, the crowds ICW continue to have, Progress, 1PW's come back, you know, Sod Pro, all these kind of companies. Look at the landscape. And this is after a worldwide, you know, pandemic. So for anyone to think that nothing, you can achieve what you want to achieve in this, I really do believe that. You know, there's different routes for everybody. At one time, there was a very linear path, or it seemed that way. Whereas in 2022, who would have thought that a few years ago that after sort of Impact and TNA, who would have thought that there would be another major professional wrestling league like there is now, you know, by AEW? So people would have never predicted that. People would have never, 15, 16 years ago, it's finished, but who would have thought that WWE would have started in NXT UK at the time, or even the NXT system in itself, a national product and a developmental program that's now got a nationwide TV deal. So nothing, you know, the only limitations Riley could have are the ones that he could put on himself, and I don't think they're there. So I'm excited to see him prosper, because I think he offers something different as well. Like I say, he's tall, he's strong, he's athletic. He can put some sentences together as well, which always helps. And I've got a lot of faith in him. So everything as well in his own life, in his own personal life, anything that he's put his mind to, he's achieved it. And that's a really admirable quality.
Yeah, he seems very balanced and sensible. And like you say, very athletic, got a good size, got a good look about him. And having you there by his side is definitely going to pay dividends. But we've had a few people reach out already. Let's have a quick look. My Brit Rest Journey, Chris Lappin. He was actually at your seminar yesterday. Loved the seminar with Joe yesterday at the Island Temple. Really insightful, learnt so much. It was a great, really supportive group. And I somehow did a handstand into a front roll at his age. So well done, Chris. Congratulations. We've had Adam Wright, reach out again. Any advice for someone who's just starting and just over a month into training in how to come up with a character in wrestling? So I know they say that the best characters are like an extension of your normal self, just turned up somewhat. But any advice from yourself who's had to kind of build your character over the years, Joe?
I think it's just a case of, like you say, if he's just started and he's over a month in training, obviously focusing on the fundamental side of the training. And I think the more you get into it, and the more you Adam's obviously a wrestling fan and someone who pays close attention, I think it's looking at gaps in the market as well and seeing what, you know, like you said, I mean, it is an extension of our own personalities. If you try and be somebody that you're not, a lot of the times people can see very much through that. I don't consider myself a character. I just consider myself, you know, like I said, I don't walk around my house with Josie Connors all the time, but there's very much a part of me that has that, the wrestling side of me in my personality. So I think it is just a case of finding things inside of you, things that make you angry, things that make you happy, things that make you upset, things that make you feel euphoric, tying into those emotions. Because that's what wrestling's about. It's about making other people react and making other people emote and tapping into those connections. So just taking things from your own personal life, past experiences, maybe people close to you, and seeing if you can meld that and make it, you know, like you said, borrowing a line from you, dialing it up.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to take a little bit of a dive into your kind of love for pro wrestling, especially maybe from a young age. Did you have any heroes or who was quite influential on you when you were a young wrestling fan then, Joseph?
Well, I mean, when I first got into wrestling, I've got a brother who's 8 years older than me. So he's in his early 40s now. So his era was, you know, the early 90s. And as a kid, I remember like having very small exposure to pro wrestling. He had the figures and some of the tapes and stuff like that. And then after, like I said, my brother's quite a bit older than me, and pretty much grew up predominantly with my mother. Once my parents divorced, when I was quite young. So I didn't really have a lot of exposure to pro wrestling. Didn't have Sky television or cable television or anything like that. And then I'd say in the sort of mid-90s, I used to walk past the video shelves and I just see the pictures of the latest tapes. And I remember the first person I ever saw after the Hogans and the Warriors and Jay Roberts's and stuff like that, the first person I saw that just really grabbed my attention was Mankind, as I just found a picture of him fascinating, you know, kind of terrifying at the same point.
Yeah.
And also, I think you resonate with, you know, colours and characters and looks and stuff like that. So the first few people I remember really being connected to is like Mankind, Kane, Bret Hart and stuff like that. So like these very standout images, Mankind and Kane, and then Bret for the pink and black sort of, and the leather jacket look and all that kind of stuff. And then when I started to get more exposed to pro wrestling in my sort of teenage childhood, wrestling became very mainstream again. Even British television, a lot of people who may be listening to this, and I'm sure yourself know, you know, came into Channel 4, came into terrestrial television. So at that point, the more I got into it, like I said, my favourites were the Canes and the Mankinds and stuff like that. But I think when everybody filtered away from wrestling, you know, when there was a bit of a drop-off period, and then me and a couple of people kept watching it, I remember when WWE were, you know, really heavily doing their DVDs before the network, I got the Eddie Guerrero DVD, and just listening and watching his story and seeing how he grew up and the backstory, you know, seeing the road to where he came from, that was inspiring. And then I got so much more into Bret Hart's career as well. Like I heroes are, you know, tough. Is an interesting word, but inspirational wise, I mean, I think Bret Hart's probably my favorite wrestler of all time, and I like the sort of how he sticks to, you know, his thought pattern and, you know, his matches. Like you mentioned the fact that I love, you know, I'm a big movie fan, and I think movie and wrestling correlate a lot. But I look at a lot, you know, you look at a lot of the major Bret matches, you know, the ones that have become timeless over the years, they play like, you know, like a Scorsese, Goodfellas, like, you know, top,
yeah, timeless.
Yeah, they are like, you know, Brett Piper, Brett Mr. Perfect, Brett Sean, like Brett and Owen, like you could just keep naming. So he's someone for me. And then of course, you know, excuse me, from a European standpoint, how could I not, you know, look up someone like William Regal as well and getting to meet the man, and I owe the fact that I got signed from him and stuff like that. So those are massive. I like the word inspirations, but yeah, those are guys that stand out as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And did you always know that you wanted to be a pro wrestler? Was that an ambition or a desire of yours from an early age? Or was something that came more into your teens? When did you kind of have that realization that this is what you wanted to do?
Yeah, not at all. I mean, like as a 10, 12-year-old kid growing up in a small village in the East Midlands, how do you become a professional wrestler? You know, that doesn't sound viable. What I do know is that if I look at everything I've ever been interested in, it's always been, you know, sports, movies, art, music, film, you know, like lots of people. But I always liked, like being a bit of a fantasist, I guess, you know, going into a bit of a different world. And I love the creative aspects of things. I was always better at, you know, writing than I was multiplying and doing maths and science. I was always better with my words and interested in creative aspects. That's where I've always gone to. Just because I had no inclination about how, you know, I think when you grow up, as you know, I know things are changing a bit now, but you know, I don't want to be like back in my day, but you know, when I was a kid, you know, you just assume that you're going to go to university, maybe, you know, get a job, meet somebody, get married, have kids, you know. I mean, obviously there's deviations, but you assume that's the pattern. But for me, I always knew I wanted to do something, but I didn't know what that something was going to be, you know. I played in bands, I played instruments, I wrote and creative writing and stuff, but I was always a massive, massive wrestling fan for years, you know. Wrestling was a constant, and it was just as simple as I'd recently gotten my my driving license. At the time, I was kind of a bit like, you know, as you do, maybe not so much now with the price of petrol, but back then I wanted to take the car out and go places and do stuff. And my best friend was like, oh, there's a local show on in Leicester, should we go and see it? And I was like, okay, why not, you know, I'll take the car out, we'll go out, be something different. And I went to this local show, and I think a friend of mine had recently been considering going to training or finding a school, and I asked me if I was interested in participating. And of course, you know, at that time I wasn't in any shape. I really let myself go a little bit, and I was just a typical, oh, you know, when I get in shape, you know, I'll do that. And then I went to the show, simply put. I just thought, well, if some of the guys on this are doing it, I'd like to at least try it. And then a week later, I went to school, started training, started sort of falling in love with the aspect of it, and it just took me away from there. And I knew I always wanted to be as heavily involved in the industry as I could, but at the time, I certainly, you know, when I was 14, I never thought I'm going to be a professional wrestler one day. You know, just never. How does that happen? You know, it's like people who don't know me, if they if they ask my wife or something what I do, you know, they at first, for some people, they can't comprehend how that is possible, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I kind of want to touch on your kind of early days now, because now correct me if I'm wrong, but I think your career started around 2006. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah.
And predominantly around the Northeast and the Midlands for like Real Deal Wrestling and the Slam Academy. So give us a bit of an insight into what sort of a developing, aspiring pro wrestler you were around them early days, because fairly early on you were mixing it up with the likes of Martin Kirby, Dara Diablo, Johnny Storm, Styx, fairly early on. So cutting your teeth with some big names, or they're certainly bigger names now, but certainly established wrestlers back in the day. And how did you, I mean, I'm guessing you progressed and you adapted quite quickly. Give us a bit of an insight into what Joseph Connors was like back in 2006, 2007.
Much chubbier, a lot less hair. I started at a place called MBW, which was a training school run by Styx, which has now evolved into House of Pain Academy. And I I mean, like I say, I don't know how long, John, you've been following British wrestling, but, you know, the scene when I first came in, other than, say, like the All-Star team, you know, there wasn't like, and actually, I'll correct myself, FWA as well, you know, it wasn't like we're a bit spoiled now, you know, with some of the crowds and the size of, you know, go back to the beginning of last month when you had 1PW, Soft Pro, New Japan, Rep Pro, like, and then I think Target and countless of Pro Wrestling Evolution, all these other companies were running on the same day and all drawing good houses. So, you know, when I first started, you know, if there was 100 people in an audience, I mean, that was WrestleMania kind of quality, you know. But when you first start, just to wrestle in front of audiences and do shows is a big thing, because, you know, when you first get into wrestling, at least for me, I'm just like, I just want to have a match. You know, my goal. I want to achieve that. And then when you start driving up and down the road a little bit and doing shows, it's interesting, some of the names you reel off, like Kirby, who's someone who's been a massive opponent for me over the years and someone I've known for a very, very long time. You know, both started around the same time. His career took off a lot more than mine did in the early days. But we're all just, you know, we're all learning, and I probably thought it was a lot better than I actually was at the time. But it was all just part of, you know, experience and just doing shows and you know, being young. And it was like, that was my university, going up and down the road doing shows in the middle of night, you know, these places I've never really been to, being in a car with a load of guys and, you know, putting my boots on and learning on the job, really. It's weird, you know, now that, like I say, 16 years this year since I had my first match, and thinking back, but it's the typical thing. Like, you don't really, they were fun times. But I think, like I said to you earlier on when we were speaking, I think really when I look back at things, it wasn't until I was probably like 24 when I really started to up my game and take things a lot more seriously. I was, you know, a decent hand for the experience I was. But if you compare me to, say, someone like Riley now, yeah, I was nowhere near in his league. Though I will say, maybe the tools and some of the things weren't as readily available to us. You know, we were, like you say, the names you just reeled off there, myself, Kirby, Dara, John, you know, Johnny Storm, Sticks was probably only about 5 years, and at that point, me and Kirby would have been about the same. Dara was maybe about a year ahead of me. You know, so none of us were like, you know, we weren't Arn Anderson, Tony Blanchard, Ric Flair, by any
cutting your teeth at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and you mentioned that you didn't really feel like you were finding your groove until you were about 24. That was actually going to be my next question. But, I mean, I think a pivotal time for yourself would have been around about 2010, 2011, when you started to get booked more for the likes of NGW, that was a fairly new company at that time. I think they came about in about 2008, 2009. Did a few gigs for All-Star. Southside came your way as well, and you started to work a lot for Southside. Would you say that was kind of a bit of a pivotal turning point in your career, about 2010, 2011, when these companies started to come around and you started to get more bookings with those sort of groups?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in that time period is when me and Paul Mainland started tagging up as an act called The Predators. So me and Paul had wrestled against each other a lot, especially when I first started. Paul was about a year ahead of me and somebody I looked up to when I first came in. And we wrestled against each other a lot. And then we formed that tag team. And that's when we started to get a bit of, at the time, you know, a decent bit of like notoriety. And we got, you know, we were lucky to, Southside connection was big at the time. Southside was one of the bigger promotions themselves. Preston City, some of the others were like, you know, the guys who were using sort of the FWA 1PW business model of using homegrown talent, but then also an influx of, you know, known names from WWE or TNA and stuff like that, balancing up for your casuals and your British wrestling fans and, you know, merging the two. So definitely that was a pivotal moment. But, you know, I think once again, it would have been interesting, you know, like anything, if I could take the knowledge I have now and put it into that team. But I think for our experience levels and where we were, we did, you know, a good job with what we were doing at the time. I'm sure if you put a DVD on, or a video of me on from that period, I'd feel, you know, I wouldn't want to watch it. But, you know, it's all relative at the time. So
yeah,
definitely, I definitely started to turn things from just being a guy turning up on shows and doing little bits to maybe getting known for, okay, this is Joseph Conn, one half of the tag team as the Predators.
Yeah, absolutely. And would you say that Southside was a pivotal to your development as a singles wrestler as well? Because you mentioned that you was a tag team wrestler for some of the groups I mentioned earlier with Paul, and I think he was a tag team champion in Southside with him. Your first stint was about 14 or 15 months, a very long reign first time round. But then eventually you started doing a lot more solo stuff, a lot more singles work. And I think that was very much the focus when you were with Southside. You had a lot of success with them. Do you think that that was the group that really started to, make you more focused on singles competition?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Now that I look back, especially, I mean, Southside was huge for me, looking back at it, definitely. Without Southside, I wouldn't have been able to develop Joseph Connors as I did. That's when things started to change for me as a singles competitor. And when I started to get more notoriety and probably work down south more and get more interest from other places and develop myself and change from just being, a stable hand to being, you want to have Joseph Connors on a card because he can give you this, you know, rather than he will just give you a decent match or something like that. And also I had a bit more, I hate the word, you know, creative freedom, but, you know, I had like a little bit more, I had some trust built in with the promotion, in the sense that I knew I was going to be booked for them for a while, so I had a chance to do a bit. Sometimes, you know, it's hard to get any, you know, sometimes you'll get brought in for a place for a one-off or two bookings, and that's fine. But obviously, you know, it's hard, you know, if you watch a Monday Night Raw or a SmackDown or a Dynamite, you get weeks, months, perhaps years to tell a story and develop a character. If you're watching me for the first time, I've got to come through the curtain and let you know I am, with no commentators and just on my entrance kind of thing, and in that match. So Southside, I was booked pretty much on all the cards, and could develop and learn and you know, add elements to the character, the persona that I am. So Southside was massive.
Yeah, like I say, they were a fantastic group that really allowed you to find your personality and to hit your stride as a performer. You're a former three-time Southside heavyweight champion. I think you wrestled pretty much all the imports they brought over as well, former WWE stars and kind of all the great North American names, and all the top UK names as well. So they gave you some wonderful opportunities. And any fond memories about maybe some of the imports that they flew over for you to work, or some of the UK names? And I know, you know, you wrestled Spud in a career versus title match just before he went over to the States in about 2016. So you had some 2015 actually. So you had some really memorable opponents and some memorable matches as well, Joseph.
Yeah, huge. Some that stand out. Sky Too Hotty at the time, and sit still, because he was somebody that I would watch on TV, you know, and is still a massive star to this day. So getting to wrestle him and be on the receiving end of the worm, you know, as a fan, you know, it wasn't the best experience at the time.
It's a bucket list thing, isn't it? Yes. I've taken the worm.
To be in the ring with him. And then years later, I'm at the PC in America, and there he is, and, you know, he remembers me and stuff, and that's cool. I got a lot of respect for him. A big thing for me was working Hardcore Holly, because I knew the reputation of, you know, Bob Holly is a badass, you know, he's not the guy a lot of people want to fight with, and I wanted to wrestle him because I wanted to see if I could hold my end of the bargain against him and, you know, see how tough I am, basically. And he, you know, I wrestled him five times at different, if not just Southside, but different promotions. And he was a really, you know, he didn't take it easy on me in the ring, but he was a big supporter of mine. Like he gave me a big confidence boost, in the sense that he appreciated who I was at that time and wanted to go against me. And you know, and he chopped the living, you know what, out of me.
But, he doesn't hold back, does he?
And he shouldn't. And I don't, you know, I certainly didn't want him to. But he, that was a big, you know, that was big, being with him. Spud's another guy that you mentioned who I've got a lot of time for. You know, sometimes he talks a lot, but as I do, but I've got a lot of respect for him. He helped me massively in terms of, he gave me a sort of second sort of like learning curve. I went to him during those periods I was talking about when I evolved my game. I did a lot of training under him at the time and wrestled him a lot. And I got a lot of respect for what he does in the industry. I think he's very adaptable. I think you can learn a lot of lessons from him. I think he gets a lot of credit, to be fair, but like,
yeah,
he's a very smart guy, very smart, and he truly loves this industry.
Yeah,
and
he's very switched on. Yeah.
Oh, wow, God, yeah. Maybe one of the most switched on people I've met in terms of wrestling. But yeah, he was another one. He was a big part of my evolution.
Yeah, absolutely. And for anybody watching at home live, and we thank you for joining us for this special episode of Wrestling with Jonas. We're Joseph Connors, our 5th year anniversary special. Get in touch. There's still time for you to send me your questions. Let's say get in touch using your chosen device. They'll ping through to us and we'll bring them up on screen. We'll answer them all before the end of this episode. But Joseph, I want to talk to you about WCPW, because I think that promotion came around in 2016 and you were there from the off. You were there from the very beginning. And I think you've probably got a lot of fond memories from those early WCPW days. You were their second ever champion. You had some fantastic championship defenses against the likes of Joe Hendry and Drew McIntyre. You had several matches with Drew McIntyre and others. But a lot of people kind of hark back to those WCPW days. And I've even seen on Martin Kirby's social pages saying, you know, what fond memories he has of WCPW. And he was one of your classic opponents in that group. But give us your kind of recollections of your time with that group. And I know they changed to Defiance, and I think they kind of dropped off the scene about 2019. But for that 2 or 3 years, there was something special there, wasn't there?
Yeah, it's crazy how much that resonated with people. When I go abroad, or the people who recognise me or talk to me, obviously people, you know me from doing some WWE stuff, but what culture is always the stuff that people really tap into in terms of, you know, a lot of people are like, you know, my first exposure to you was WCPW and I love that run. And at the time, like, I remember going into the first What Culture shows and not really knowing a lot about What Culture until somebody, I think it was Gabriel Kidd, they said, oh no, like, you know, look at this, like, look at the reach they've got on YouTube and look at, like, the history of this channel, you know. And once again, I said to you before, you know, you hear a lot of things. The amount of times I've been told our promotion's going to be on television, or we're going to be doing it, you know, you get, or you're going to be in the ring with such and such, and blah, blah, you know, you have to keep your feet on the floor. But What Culture was the first time. I was on holiday, actually. I just wrestled Parker Holly and I went on holiday. I remember my chest was red raw. People thought I'd been in some kind of bloody, like, Wolverine had been at my chest, I think. And, you know, I remember looking at my phone when the first episode aired. And it was the first probably time I'd experienced, like, that kind of Twitter, you know, in terms of my feed, like, that kind of blow up, and realizing, okay, there's an audience for this. And yeah, I love that What Culture experience, that run. I mean, it's such a shame that it fizzled out in quite a short period. But that, especially that first year, I think for a lot of the guys and girls who were involved in it in that first period, you know, like myself, Rampage, Kaylee, Nixon, Yule, Kirby, Gabe, you know, the list is endless of the guys and the girls. But, like, it was, you know, really special. And they did a good job of, you know, someone like myself, I was in a very prominent role. I got to, you know, I featured with a lot of the top UK talent, and that match me and Kirby had, you know, I think we stole the show on a card that had, you know, massive names on it. And we got our match commentated by Jim Ross and Jim Cornette, and the atmosphere. If you go back and see that reaction when I beat Kirby, it's amazing. You know, people were pissed I was walking out of that title belt. Obviously, I was elated, but the people in the audience weren't too happy, and it was a real reaction. We had something with that promotion,
yeah.
And it's a real shame that it disappeared. But it was a really good time. It really put the spotlight on a lot of guys and girls and we did some really cool stuff there. I mean, I think guys like, I think I wrestled Cody Rhodes, maybe one of his first appearances after leaving WWE on that first run. You know, I mean, he went to What Culture. That was a big, you know, that was a big deal. Like, you know, they had him. And, you know, you had Kurt Angle main eventing shows and stuff. I mean, you had Bret Hart introducing title belts. I mean,
it's literally Ricochet and Ospreay doing their thing. Yeah,
100%. Yeah, I mean, Drew had had his run. Like, so many guys. You know, Kaylee Ray. You know, all these people. Like, it was huge. And I think anyone who was a part of it definitely misses that promotion for sure.
Absolutely. Lightning in a bottle, if I can get my words out. But I want to talk to you a bit about WWE now. And I think British wrestling fans, their imagination was really captured when the very first United Kingdom Championship tournament came around in early 2017. I'm interested to know, how did you first appear on WWE's radar? I'm guessing sometime in 2016, because I remember that scene, and I've got a picture here of all you guys suited and booted up on that stage in London as they announced, almost out of the blue, to be honest with you, the first ever, the inaugural WWE United Kingdom Championship. It wasn't the NXT UK Championship back then, but when did you first get that call about possibly being part of this tournament?
So, yeah, my first connections with WWE, like I said to you, obviously it had been a goal of mine to try and be signed by WWE or have some kind of, you know, chance to work with them. And I'd always heard that, you know, once you hit over 30, that's going to be a struggle. So I was 29 and I really was like, okay, I need to really start, you know, seeing where this, if I can get anything going with this. So I did some seminars with Dave Taylor, who was fantastic. Really, you know, he gave me some advice, and I think he put in, you know, a word to one or two people about myself, which I really appreciated. And he's probably one of the funniest people I've ever met. And then I went to another seminar with Robbie Brookside when he came back over to England, and I think there's about 60 of us there. You know, all different people. You know, talent that you'd know the names of, you know, people who've done stuff now, you know, men and women who've all, you know, achieved some cool stuff. And I think Robbie, I may have met Robbie in brief passing at All Star, but there's no way, you know, and I don't blame him, he would have remembered me at the time. But we just did this long seminar. He spoke, he asked me a question. I think he mentioned that he knew something about me. And then we did some different drills, different techniques. I think, you know, I just managed to do a couple of things that stood out on that seminar. Had a chance to speak to him afterwards. He asked me to stay in touch, which I did. Obviously, the man is a very busy man. Got a lot of things going on. And I would email him and keep him up to date on what was going on. And then I think I was getting ready to send an email to the talent relations people at the time, and I thought, I'll just send I think it got to that point where I hadn't heard back from Robbie, not in a bad way, but like I said, he's busy. I wasn't expecting him to get back to me at the time. So probably the emails from me stopped a little bit. And then I put together like an email that I was going to send to the talent relations people because it was getting closer to this dreaded 30 number. And I thought, okay, I'll just send it to Robbie before I send it out and see what he said. And then it just happened to be around the time of like April when WWE come to England. And he asked me if I wanted to go and do some like extra work. So obviously I checked my calendar and was like, yes, I would like to go and do that. There was only four of us there, which was cool. Got a chance to meet William Regal. Did a like tryout promos at the O2 in London, and then just once again asked to stay in contact. You know, it wasn't like, oh, let's sign you up for SmackDown right now. It's just, okay, thank you very much. Had a chance to meet Mr. Regal, and then What Culture basically happened after that. So I was pretty busy anyway. 2016 was a good year, but I still tried to keep in contact with William Regal, sending him information and matches. And I think I was in line for a November tryout as well, and then that didn't come off. So at the time I was thinking, okay, maybe, you know, you just tell yourself, okay, it's not this time. And I was, like I said, I was enjoying my independent stuff anyway, things were going well. And then one I think it was November or December, cold evening. I'd just come out of training. I was with the Sarge, actually, of all people, coming out of training school. And then my phone had a call, and it said Stamford, Connecticut on it. And I thought, this is either WWE or this is the world's worst cold call. And I remember I had a really, like, my mobile phone. Anyone who's listening to this who knows me, I always have trouble with mobile phones. And this mobile phone was, like, hanging on by a thread. It kept dropping out, and William Reed was on the phone to me, and all I'm thinking is, oh, Jesus, like, this phone's going to die on me, kind of thing. And he just mentioned the fact that there was going to be this tournament, would I be interested in being part of it? And there wasn't loads of details at the time, so putting it together, and of course, like, this is what I've been working towards. And then not long after that phone call, that photo you just put up where Roy Johnson's eyes are closed, there he is. Yeah, there he is. Roy's eyes are closed, I believe. There he is.
You've got a better glimpse there. Yeah, they're definitely closed.
Yeah. It all was like a whirlwind. It all just kind of started to happen. And then the tournament wasn't, I think tournament was January 2017, and that photo was December 2016. So it all just happened very, very fast.
It really did. And I've got to say, as a wrestling fan, and I was probably a few years into my indie wrestling fandom by the time 2017 rolled around, and I was familiar with a lot of the guys in the tournament. But that then two nights in Blackpool, then two nights in the Empress Ballroom was something special. Something special watching it from the comfort of my living room. I know people that were there that said it was just an amazing two nights. But to be a part of that tournament, Joseph, must have been something special. All the butterflies, all the nerves, all the, wonderful kind of feelings. And you were part of both nights, weren't you? The first round of the quarterfinal matches.
That's right.
Yeah. As a competitor, you would have been in the business, gone 10 years by that point. That must have been pretty much a highlight for you to be performing in a WWE ring in somewhere like the Empress Ballroom in front of them crazy hot fans for 2 days with some of the best action that we've seen over on these shores for many years.
Validation's the word, like you say, it was like, okay, the people who think that what I've been doing the last years of my life is a waste of time, here we go, here I am. And then it's like, okay, now all this time that I've been working towards this, now I've got to deliver in this one match or two matches, this could like make or break, so you're going to get one chance to sort of do something for the first time. And, my first WWE match was live on TV against someone I'd never wrestled before, on the first ever British tournament, I just remember coming back after the match thinking, okay, let's see what the reaction is. They were very happy with that particular match. And it was just, like I say, the word is validation. And it was another one of those things, because obviously it happened so fast, but now you can look back at, I don't think I myself appreciated how cool and how important that is, that tournament, the first ever British tournament. Huge deal, and it was surreal to say the least at the time. And but I'm definitely very proud to be Sam, just like I think all 16 men are, that they were part of that.
Yeah. So after them two nights, am I right in thinking, now please correct me if I'm wrong, but the very next time you were inside a WWE ring was at WrestleMania Access in Florida in WrestleMania 33. Pretty mind-blowing if that is the case.
It was
three matches, I think, while you're over in Florida. But if that was your next kind of stint in the WWE ring, that's pretty cool.
That was very cool, because I'd gone to WrestleMania 25 as a fan, and I remember going with like two of my best mates. I was talking about when I grew up at school, two of my friends that I watched it with, and then certain wrestlers that were involved in the scene, we went to watch it. And that was cool, just going as a fan, going to see WrestleMania as like a 20-year-old, and then to go back as an employee. And also remember, when we were staying, me and James Drake roomed there, and we're staying in the hotel where every legend who's getting inducted into the Hall of Fame is staying, and all the wrestlers that are a part of the card for staying. You know, I remember because I was working, trying to work out every morning before I did, trying to get, just want to obviously, be in the best shape of my life kind of thing. Best, I remember getting tapped on the shoulder and there's X-Pac in the hotel changing room because I'd, done shows with him and stuff like that. You know, it's just like everywhere you walk was the Big Show one second, Teddy Long another second, Ricky Morton another second, like, just, who's who of just like,
yeah,
wrestling's past, wrestling's future kind of thing. So yeah, going to do Access was really cool. Really cool to be out in America. And obviously it was in Florida that year, so I got to go to the PC and be a part of that. And really at that point it feels like, okay, things are happening, this is what I've been working for, yeah. So let's get stuck in.
This is the dream. Was you already signed by then, Joseph?
Yeah, I was signed. At that point. I was signed, from what I remember, for a certain amount of appearances. And then because of what I did, I ended up going over those appearances. I was, there was a few of us in that group who, I got to do like a run of SmackDown house shows and things like that. And which was, I did like a 7-night tour, I think, with them, which was cool. And then after that, when they decided, okay, well, we've got these guys and we'd like to develop this program, but we don't quite know exactly where we're going with it. Obviously it formulated into what we know as NXT UK, but I assume that was always going to be, it's hard. Things like just saying, okay, we're going to make a new, new brand or a new chain of anything, is it doesn't happen overnight. So that's why I was still working independent. So it was weird because, I had one week I'm in Florida, and then the next week I'm in Sheffield in a working men's club. I have one foot in the door and one foot out, and that's kind of what it always felt like a little bit. So, it's different, like if you're in America and you're an NXT roster member at the time, you're an NXT roster member. Whereas at the time it was like, well, I'm signed to the WWE, I've got a contract, but I'm not like, it's not like I'm turning up to WWE every week because there is no base for WWE, so and then it's like anything could happen at any moment for anybody,
I'm not going to kind of break down everything you did in NXT UK, but just some of the kind of bullet points. So you wrestled at the Royal Albert Hall in the second ever UK tournament. You wrestled at the Download Festival, WrestleMania Access, as we just mentioned. When the WWE toured the UK, you were part of their live events, and you're on 205 Live, I believe. And both UK tournaments, the 2017 and the 2018 UK tournaments, I mentioned the Royal Albert Hall. But in a nutshell, some pretty cool moments and some pretty special memories for you of those 3 or 4 years that you were with that company, Joseph.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be lying if I didn't say that. I wish I'd have, I would like to be laying up a litany of more stuff I've done there. But
yeah.
No, I mean, definitely that first year and a half, 2 years especially, getting to be on a SmackDown house show tour, on the road, on the buses, 7-8 nights, that was awesome, being on show. I mentioned someone like Kane, that I grew up watching Kane, and there I am on a card with him, Wembley Arena, places like that, it's I can't take that away from us. I worked at Nottingham Ice Arena. I used to work there on security, So then I remember doing my first shift there. I did an Ant and Deck takeaway bloody evening on the door and going, wouldn't it be cool one day if I get, if I wrestled here and then get to do that? And that's the kind of stuff where so fixated on, I need to do this, I need to be in better shape, I need to get here, I need to get there, rather than just going, that was awesome, I did that. Like, did 205 Live at the O2, and that's a huge, it's massive. I think we had the match, one or two, I can't remember if it was the, I did two 205, so I can't remember if it was the first or second one, but we wrestled, like, just after AJ beat Jinder Mahal, for the title, just little things like that, it was all, that's awesome. I mean, I wish I'd have been the one, winning the first tournament or the second tournament, but that wasn't, that it wasn't meant to be in that particular run. But as I said at the beginning of the call, I'm not counting myself out of anything at the moment. But no, I look back and I'm very proud that I got to achieve, you know, I got to do those things.
Yeah, and something I found quite fascinating kind of doing my research on you ahead of today's interview is that you did actually have, once again, please correct me if I'm wrong, but you did actually have a match for the NXT UK Championship, but it wasn't in a WWE ring. You had it against Pete Dunne at a Progress show. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. I don't know how many times the belt was... you would have to look it up. I don't know how many times the belt was defended outside of... I think at the beginning, at the beginning of the first WWE, the WWE UK title as it was then, I think I challenged for it about five or six times. We did a 2-day pilot at Norwich, and I wrestled Tyler Bate. It's a match I've never seen. I don't know what it would look like now, but we got a standing ovation for the match we had. But that never aired. I wrestled Wolfgang the next day. And that did air. It's probably on the network. It's I think the main event of the show was Tyler and Mark, and then I think that sets up Pete and Tyler for the big title match they had in America. But that was the... We did those shows thinking, okay, this might lead into the weekly television show, and then that didn't happen at that time, and then it would be later on.
I remember them episodes. They were
kind of
one-offs, yeah.
So that was cool. I think I had two challenges at WrestleMania. Maybe I'm one of the guys who challenged for the belt for most amount of time somehow, but just never got my hands on the thing.
Yeah, really, really fascinating. We've got a few more questions that came through before we went live. Let's just bring this one up from Wrestling Life via Twitter. Any funny stories about Ilya Dragunov, Jinni, or Saxon Huxley? And I've got a very similar question, so I'll flash this one up as well. Tell us the most funniest NXT UK story backstage. So do you have any kind of funny happenings, funny stories that you can divulge, maybe relating to Ilya or Jinni or Saxon? And I know you worked with Jinni a lot towards the end of your WWE run, but anything you can tell us on the podcast?
Well, Ilya Dragunov. Is Ilya Dragunov. He is like a Russian cyborg. So I didn't really get a chance to see a lot of Ilya outside of the ring. But Ilya Dragunov, and what you see on TV, I'd say, is almost like the toned down Ilya Dragunov. He's a cyborg. He's a different level.
Intense.
But I respect what when we were doing our reps in the ring, I got in there with him and stuff like that, and I appreciate what he brings to the ring, and obviously he's having success. But Ilya is definitely an interesting personality. Saxon Huxley inside wrestling is one of my favorite people. He's another character. I roomed with Saxon a lot. So the thing with Saxon Huxley is, and I just find him amusing in any situation. So I could just look at him and I find him amusing, and he could be doing the most mundane kind of he's also one of the most intelligent people I've met, but also at the same time can then be the most stupid people I've met either. I'd love to walk around his brain for a day. I've heard that about Jeff Hardy. I think the same with Saxon. He's another guy who, he is money. He is, he's a very, he's very talented and very interesting. The moments of I remember just being around some of the people, just the normal things that, the TV days are long. Just traveling to an indie show, you can be backstage for a long time and stuff. And you make bonds with people, or you gravitate towards certain people, you don't gravitate towards others. But just playing card games, having laughs, silly little stupid things to make the time go easier and stuff like that. I'm trying to think of something that might stand out, but.
That's all right if you can't. No, it's all right.
I would tell some Sam Gradwell stories, but I wouldn't want to incriminate. I wouldn't want to incriminate him too much. But he is probably legitimately the funniest person I've ever met. If he had like a show, he'd be like, I think he's in the wrong industry sometimes. I think he should have his own like sitcom or something like that. He is, he's a storyteller. Having Sam Gradwell basically sat around telling stories, and also Mark Coffey's William Regal impression was always very entertaining, which I think he did for William Regal in a promo class, which was very, very impressive. He's another, he's another guy who was, he just made me laugh. That Scottish sense.
Fantastic. Another question that came through before we went live from Richie, good friend of the show via Facebook. What are some of the key learnings coming out of WWE NXT UK that you have brought or bring to the Indies?
I mean, obviously, from a cliche answer, which I don't mean to, I'm trying not to make it, but like when you learn it from, like, for example, William Regal or Shawn Michaels, you're going to, like, just watching William Regal explain something and showing you his facial reactions and shit, you're like, he can switch the light on like that. You know, he is just, you know, I don't need, William Regal doesn't need me to endorse him, but like, you know, just the little things that he would show you. And, God, you know, just so incredible. But I think like a lot of, you know, I got, obviously during COVID, after COVID and during the pandemic, when we were allowed to train, you know, we were pretty much training with Johnny Moss and James Mason, two guys I've got unlimited respect for. And like just learning a lot of the old like British techniques and British style that I'd never really had, you know, other than little bits, you know, but when you're in the ring with two of the best at it, you know, I like taking, I'm not saying I'm in a James Mason or Johnny Moss category, but I like bringing some of that into what I'm doing now because a lot of people don't do that style, you know. So I like bringing that in. I also, Robbie Brookside was another one, just his like, just the way he could deliver a facial and his analogies of wrestling. I don't want to say too much to be like, give a, you know, but just like it, just sitting in a, you know, being in a wrestling ring and having him getting in your face and bringing that intensity out of you and it motivating you with things, like if you're not learning from that, then there's a problem. So, you know, when you just, some of the names I've rattled off there, you know, and then like Shawn Michaels would just have these little details. I mean, obviously, you know, Shawn Michaels for crying out loud, but just these little details, and you go, you know, the only thing I regret is just not having more time to like build a connection and be able to sit under that learning tree. I think that's one of the things that, you know, if we could have been going in every day, like NXT talent were, you know, I mean, God knows where things could have gone. Because I think, you know, if you look at the majority of that roster, there's so many talented people on it, and you saw people getting better all the time because people were just working their socks off. And yeah, I mean, unlimited supply of knowledge, basically.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, we haven't spoken a lot during this interview about NGW. Now, I know that NGW are another group that have given you great opportunities and a group that are very, very close to your heart. But you recently made your return to an NGW ring very recently for the first time in, I think, probably 5 years. That must have been a pretty special moment, a pretty special occasion for you, considering your history with the company. And then, like say, after a 5-year absence, stepping through them ropes, that must have been pretty special for you.
Yeah, New Generation Wrestling, I think, are one of like the unsung promotions in terms of, you know, Twitter and Facebook and all these kind of mediums and stuff. I mean, like, such an awesome promotion from their setup to, I mean, that whole, the whole City Hall was their regular big show environment. I mean, awesome shows. But I mean, when you've got like, you've had like, you know, Nathan Cruz, Flash Morgan Webster, Rampage Brown, Adam Maxer, myself, Liam Slater, Hitchman, all these kind of people. That's just a, you know, a brief run through, and some of the homegrown talent they've provided, and the storytelling details, and some of the, and if you look at their work, some of it's probably still on YouTube, their camera work and their sort of broadcast quality. I love NGW, still love NGW. Have a lot. That was something I remember, like getting in the car, going down to go there, going, I'm looking forward to this. This is going to be awesome, and it was. They, you know, I think about 800. In attendance that night, same weekend that GCW were in the country as well.
And yeah,
you know, once again, it's, you know, it's all variables, but not you know, NGW have, they have an online presence, and that doesn't mean, but you know, it's a, honestly, it's a place I'd say to any wrestling fan, they've got a little bit of everything, and it's a very, once again, diverse, you know, different kinds of wrestlers, different types of talent, different stories. There's a bit of something for everybody in there, and I think that's the perfect encapsulation of what a wrestling show should be. And NGW, fantastic in my opinion.
Brilliant. And as we start to wind down this episode of Wrestling with Jonas, I want to ask you about your passion and your love for film and movie and cinemas, because some people may or may not know that I've got an affinity with films. I used to go to the cinema from a very, very young age, worked in the cinema industry for 17 years up and down the country as a manager of multiplexes. Anybody that knows you will know that you are passionate, you are an avid film fan, and you see films on a regular basis, a lot of the new releases. Where did this passion for movies and films begin then?
Well, I just think like there's a huge connection, isn't there? I mean, when you watch when you watch Beyond the Mat, for anyone who's seen that, I mean, the first thing Vince McMahon says in that way when he drinks that water, he goes, "We make movies," you know. And I think wrestling to me, a lot of the things that I think of for myself and great stories, there's such a connective tissue between that and great film. I mean, it was over 10 years ago, I got a card to go to the cinema. What I found was I'm a very, like, my brain is always going 10 to the dozen. You know, it's one of my biggest attributes, and it can also be a detriment, you know, so where a lot of my creative thinking comes from. But I found the cinema is one of the few places I'll turn my phone off and I'll turn my brain up and I'll just watch a film, you know. And I love, you know, very much like as a wrestling fan, like for you, if you see a great wrestling match and there's just something about it, you know, why do we watch wrestling? You know, why do we watch two men or two women or whatever, what, you know, compete? And why does it have such a strong resonation to it? Why will I still go back and watch Bret and Owen from WrestleMania, for example? You know, because it leaves me with an attachment. And it's just the same thing about film. You know, like when I see a good movie, I'm excited. I want to share it with somebody. You know, I just love that element. I think the real world can be a very, you know, at times can be a really horrible place as well. I think a movie is a great escape. Great escape, you know. And I like seeing films where I learn about a subject matter that I have no interest in or little knowledge of. You know, I mean, I'm not going to show you this office, but behind me there's racks and racks of DVDs behind me, you know, all different types of films. It's much like music. I don't, you know, I don't really shut off to many, there's, you know, so many genres. And I like, you know, I love a Scorsese or a Tarantino classic, but I can also chuck on a popcorn quality type film. I think. For me, it's just that, I think, you know, my whole life, especially my adult life, has been wrestling, you know, and you need other outlets. I think it's important. Yeah. And film is just one of those things I have a massive passion for. You know, not saying I could just write a screenplay tomorrow, but I know what I enjoy, and I like disappearing into that world, you know, during COVID and stuff like that. Like, you know, when we had, you know, when I was just, you know, we were all sort of locked down, but we're allowed to go on walks. So I did a lot of running, a lot of walking, and I couldn't listen to loads and loads of wrestling stuff all the time because I couldn't do it. So, you know, so I just delved into the world of film, and I'm one of those people who, you know, if I watch a movie, I want to learn about it. So I'm straight on that IMDb trivia page, or what, you know, what have you, and finding out about that kind of stuff. And that's a big interest of mine.
Really fascinating. And like I say, leading up to Christmas, you got all the big blockbusters being released through November and December. And then, of course, we've got another big year of a film next year. One film that I'm particularly looking forward to, I think it's coming out this Friday, is the next Black Panther film. I think it's Wakanda Forever. And that just looks amazing. I saw Black Adam the other day while I was in Exeter. So some good films out there. Some good. Do you like? You said you like a mix of films. Do you like the kind of the Marvel or the DC? And like you say, you like the Scorsese. You really do like a good mixture of films, do you? Or have you got a particular favourite genre?
Yeah. I mean, I feel for me personally, like I will go and watch. You know, it's also, you know, I'm married now. Which I've mentioned a few times over the ring to prove it. But you know, a date night, we'll go to the cinema. And yeah. I mean, there's so many. I got into the Marvel films later on because somebody I was with at the time wanted to go and see one of the Avengers films, and I like to see films. I'm a completist, so I like to see something from the beginning. I like those films. I enjoy others more than, I think sometimes they can be quite formula at times.
Yeah.
But, some of my favourite films of this year, there's been more of the films that you don't hear about. Like, there's a film called Licorice Pizza that I absolutely loved, made by Paul Thomas Anderson. And then there's, I'm trying to think, Nightmare Alley, which was really good. I'm not, the last film I went to see was Black Adam. I went to see Halloween Ends. I'll go and see, when we were in London doing those, the training camps and doing the tapings, I got Rampage Brown to get one of those Cineworld cards, and me and him would just go and see just about anything and everything, just to pass the time kind of thing. So it's, I'm into all sorts. I mean, like, my shelf here is just like, there's so much, there's like Memento, then there's Swingers, then there's Clerks, and there's, there's all sorts of stuff here. So it's, mixed bag for me.
Brilliant. Final question for me then. Like I say, you're 20 odd days away from your 16th anniversary in the business, so many congratulations for that. But have you got one or two really proud moments, or what are your top couple of proudest moments that you can really kind of, hold with pride to the end of your days to say, yeah, I did that?
So far, definitely me and Martin Kirby in Newcastle, first ever I paid for you I ever did in there with someone I've got unlimited respect for, and one of my actual friends inside the industry, someone I actually consider a friend. Signing my WWE contract, being a part of the first tournament, wrestling at the O2 because I had a match in front of two people in that building to then pretty much like, a massive thing.
Yeah.
Probably my first paid gig outside of this country, wrestling a regular schedule outside of the country as well, getting paid to go and wrestle abroad. Wrestling people I grew up watching. That's the cool thing. Now you ask me, I think I've had a chance to really look back at things and go, yeah, I've done some, Royal Albert Hall, that's a massive deal, when you think about it. And I think, there's a lot more that I'm ready to, I've got more stuff I want to add to the list, but
100%.
Yeah, definitely.
100%. Well, for any of my viewers or listeners that might be interested to learn more about Joseph Connors, where can they reach out to you on social media, say hi, see some of your footage, get to know more about Joseph Connors, or even find out where you're going to be performing over the next few weeks, few months? I'm going to bring up a little ticker along the bottom of the screen for anybody that's interested, but tell us where we can get in touch with you, my friend, and any YouTube, any merch, any websites, anything like that. The floor is yours.
Yeah, sure. So I appreciate the ticker along the bottom. I've got my blue tick, but I'm worried Elon Musk is going to take it away from me.
You might have to start paying for it. £8 a month.
Let's see what happens. Hopefully, one of these impersonators. That's me at the moment, the blue tick on Joseph Connors. My email address for booking inquiries and appearances, josephconnors@live.co.uk. Like you said at the beginning, my social media is pretty easy to follow. I try and stay active on what's going on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. In regards to merchandise, I have got signed prints available on my Connors Big Cartel. And me and Riley Nova are currently in the process of developing what we're going to have for our Bread for Better concert, which will, hopefully we'll release T-shirts and stuff like that. Just been waiting to make sure I release something I'm actually, happy with. I've been speaking to multiple logo designers and just sort of finalising touches on that. So, yeah, those are the best ways to contact me, as you can see me email address as we go along the bottom.
Do you still do your online training?
I do, yeah, I do. When I've been able to fit that in, I've done that with quite a few people in America, some people in Mexico, people up and down the country. Like I say, that's something if you are someone in the industry from a trainee or someone who wrestles regularly and you want to sit down and watch one of your matches with me or a match in particular, then I can give you my opinion on things that could hopefully make things better or things that you're doing well. Once again, as I always say, it's just my opinion. It's based on 16 years, and in those 16 years, I've made a lot of mistakes. I'm sure I'll continue to do so at times, but that's where I can develop some of the knowledge that I can pass on, and that's why I feel I am able to at least, you know, I'm doing two seminars this weekend, for example, and that I feel like I'm able to provide a good seminar because I know what it's like to fall down on many occasions. So that gives you a good balance of things.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we heard from my Brit Rest journey at the top of the podcast, Chris, let's say he thoroughly enjoyed your seminar, and he's doing very well as a trainee, especially for Wrestle Island. But for those of you that was expecting me to drop my interview or to have my live interview with Maggot last week, unfortunately, circumstances kind of life got in the way, shall we say, and Maggot had to cancel at short notice. But I'm sure we'll get Maggot on the show for the third attempt sometime very, very soon. But as a make do, what I've done is I've reached out to a friend of mine, one of the best performers in the UK, to come on the show next Monday. I think that's going to be the 14th. And I've got none other than Elijah coming on the podcast next Monday, the 14th, 8 p.m. UK, as a make do for Maggot from last week, but also to hype up his big match against Charles Crowley at the next chapter show for Progress at the Ballroom next Sunday. So Elijah will be on the show to tell us all about that. Joseph, if you'll indulge me for a few seconds, the rest of my lineup for November looks a bit like this. I've got the exotic Adrian Street and Miss Linda coming on the show. We're recording next week, and I'll probably put it out in two episodes like I did my Legends Masterclass with Marty Jones and Tony Sinclair, probably one in November and one in December. So you don't want to miss that one. Exotic Adrian Street and Miss Linda. And if I can get my graphics sorted here, I've got Kelly Six coming on the podcast very soon, Monday the 21st of November, one of the best performers in the UK and has been for many, many years. Kelly doesn't do many interviews, and it'd be great to kind of hear from the man himself about his 2022, what it's been like since lockdown, and his career, and how much fun he's having out there on the UK scene. Afterwards, I've got this man here, Rob Drake, the King of Bedlam, coming on the show, the brand new unstoppable British wrestling champion. I was there when he won it. Fantastic match, great guy, and a pro that's having a fantastic year, and he's really, really going to do some special things over the next few years. I've got Rob coming on the show Thursday, the 24th of November. Of course, younger brother to James Drake, who's doing some great things over in NXT at the moment. But Rob Drake will be coming on the show Thursday, the 24th. And my final guest for November is none other than one of the best referees in the UK. I'm sure he won't mind me saying that. Scott Bell's coming on Tuesday, the 29th of November. So an amazing lineup. Can't wait to speak to Scott. Like I say, he's had a great year reffing at 1PW and Wrestle Carnival and so many great promotions around the UK. Joseph, some big names there. Some you might know very well, some you might not. It's an interesting lineup for the rest of the month, my friend.
You've got a hell of a lineup there. I can't say that I've ever beaten Adrian Street because I've never wrestled him, but I can say that I've defeated James Drake, who's Rob's brother, and I think Scott's counted many a free count for me winning before, so I've got some connection with some of them. But yeah, that's a hell of a lineup. You've got a very diverse lineup there, so that's cool.
It certainly is. So make sure that you're subscribing to us on YouTube, Twitch, following us on Facebook to get all the updates and to watch all these interviews live. But Joseph Connors, it's been amazing speaking to you for remarkably nearly 90 minutes now, and it's gone by in a blink of an eye. But I really appreciate you coming on this milestone episode, episode 267, our fourth year anniversary show. I hope you've enjoyed yourself as much as I have, but thank you for your time, my friend. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thank you.